You're listening to the fifth episode of The Gear Heart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. If you haven't had a chance yet, or you're listening on iTunes or Podiobooks.com, you can stop by the Gear Heart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username The Gear Heart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gear Heart. Last week on the Gear Heart, Keegan learns of the attack on Isabel and orders the team onto alert. Cog dreams of dark days past, and Jonathan reveals to her a frightening new prophecy. His sinister voice calls out for the rise of a new dark power. Could it be Isabel's mysterious assailant? Find out on the Gear Heart. Darren Freeman fell back upon his bed and let the cool air trapped in the sheets wash over him. The harsh rocking of the boat was easier to take for a moment, but he knew the salubrious effects of the bed would wear off soon. With a sigh, Darren curled up and tried to get some sleep before the sheets warmed and nausea set in. But it was impossible to keep his mind off of things. He'd cut short his visit to Zoe and the others at Redfield Colony as soon as he got the news that Isabel was attacked. But the telegram didn't make a lot of sense. A priority request from Cercival to the seekers at Fumiston was indicated by the wording of the missive. But wasn't the Queen's chapter handling it? It happened on their soil. So why wasn't it their problem? He scratched his oily, black beard, trying to ignore the movement of the seas. Next to his bunk, an old steel bucket rattled to the ever-present vibrations of the diesel engine. The boat was maddening. A mercenary vessel bearing a storm-reinforced hull with a low, camouflaged profile. He could only go above decks in optimal conditions. The bridge was the only structure on the whole blasted thing with any decent windows, and he wasn't allowed up there during detection risk periods, which was basically at any point during the daytime. So his choices were stay below decks in the disjointed blackness, or go above decks in the windy, disjointed blackness. If he could just sleep, he could skip 8 hours of the journey. But it didn't make sense at all. Why wasn't Isabel sequestered for questioning? Who were the casualties in the telegram? Every scenario that played out in Darren's mind ended with dozens of Queensmen leaping out and destroying the attacker almost instantaneously. Why didn't that happen? Did the attacker stand his or her ground? Surely not. In his best years, Darren couldn't see anyone standing toe-to-toe with a Queensman. The continued rattling of the bucket handle, with his bottled-up thoughts, afforded him no respite. Darren cursed himself for uselessly thinking on the predicament, and batted the old canister across the room. Instead of hearing the regular clatter that he expected, Darren was rewarded with a tone-rich mechanical hiss and an iridescent flash. Something had just materialized in the room with him. Darren opened his nearby duffel and removed a 9mm pistol and clip. Gently, he slid the clip into the checkered handle and carefully pulled the slide until a round chambered and the hammer locked back. He wasn't the type to call out when ambush was on the line.
"I heard that, homeboy,"
came a voice from the darkness. It was cautious yet jovial, with a weathered creak in it and a tinny sound like a phonograph. Darren knew the voice from somewhere. "Then before you try anything, you should know that I've been shooting for a long time." The voice chuckled briefly, its sharp laughter scraping against the corroded steel walls.
"I'd say so, if you took my advice back at Laughing Rook."
"Laughing Rook lockup?" Darren asked. He searched his mind for anyone who could possibly know about that subject. Friedrich? The thought of his old friend brought warmth to Darren's eyes, and he reached for his lighter and lamp. He briefly wondered what business brought Friedrich to him, but it didn't matter. He would have plenty of time to ask on his accursed voyage. Darren ignited his lamp, and a globe of warm firelight engulfed the room. Darren found his gold-rimmed glasses and slid the hooks around his ears. At the edge of his bed, he spied a shining brass object clamped onto the footboard. It was a figure no more than 2 feet high, with a portly body and spindly limbs. It had two tiny clamps for hands and enormous thick quartz eyes, which gobbled up the lamplight and spat it back out as sea green. Adorning its belly were terrific engravings of eagles and ivy, and three slots that housed a single speaker. It clambered over the rail and up onto the warm cotton blanket. Its toddling gait faltered from the swaying motion of the boat, but it managed to struggle to Darren, who had swung his legs over the side of the bed. It was only when it approached closer that Darren could make out the obnoxious clicks of shutters and gears. Darren's heart sank, and the smile fell from his face.
The one and only, lad. I told you that all of that firearm nonsense would work out for you.
I see. Darren sighed, but it wasn't a response to Friedrich's observation. You've passed away after all. The automaton made a sweeping gesture that nearly knocked it off its feet.
Afraid so, old boy. Not to worry, though. They've made a copy of me.
Darren's jaw trembled a bit, but he retained his composure. I'm never sure why they do that. It's a worthless practice. Two flat pieces of metal on the creature's forehead rose over its eyes. Darren could only assume that they were supposed to be eyebrows.
Not true. They need us for missions, just like this one.
A note would have been just fine.
They told me you would find it comforting,
said Friedrich. I love finding out that people died without a shoulder to cry on.
No, come now, lad. You've seen plenty of friends die in your time.
Friedrich bowed with a flourish and then struggled to retain his balance as the boat rose sharply beneath him.
They say we copies are quite convincing.
Convincing, but a complete lie, Darren snorted. You're incapable of learning any new attitudes, so you merely default to the most prevalent demeanor on a subject. The automaton cocked its head slightly in a rather animalistic gesture.
What are you all about?
I'm saying that you always liked me in life, so you'll like me now that you're a pathetic, worthless vestige of what you once were, Darren calmly explained.
I don't understand, but I'm sure you're quite right, my boy,
Friedrich said with a hearty laugh. My point exactly.
Surely you're being too harsh.
Another example, then. King Benjamin.
God rest him,
sighed Friedrich. Queen Anne.
God save her,
replied Friedrich. Taxes and paperwork.
Scallywags and skullduggery.
Which is why interacting with you is like seeing that someone has stuffed your old friend and mounted him on the wall like a trophy. You're an abomination, and I find everything about you painful and morbid, said Darren, his voice bereft of emotion. Behind his spectacles, his eyes watered a bit, but he was good at keeping a hold on these things.
Ha! Very well spoken, my boy.
Darren's nostrils flared, but his expression remained fairly unchanged. So who sent you?
The main house in Cercival.
What do they want?
It's the Department of Oracular Studies, actually.
Darren's heart sank even further. In his time with the Seekers, he had known of only 10 people contacted by the Seeress, and 9 of them had died gruesome deaths. She tended to stop babbling only to get people killed, though it generally resulted in a net profit for the organization as a whole. And that's why they picked you to tell me, then, Friedrich. I'd heard that the last mission of yours ended up in the guillotine, after a missive from the Seeress.
The intent was to inspire you, old boy, to let you know that you could be immortalized in service to the Seekers.
The robot's eyes seemed to burn with an internal fire.
Not one in a million has this chance, lad, and here we are. I died serving her, and you must know that I have no regrets.
Yes, you did grin like an idiot right up until you left your cell.
That was the remorseless smile of a patriot, friend, and you cannot pay gold bars for peace of mind like that,
said Friedrich, strutting like he had somehow grown shinier. I see. And now look at you, said Darren, sweeping his arm over the little automaton's head. The top of the world, the echo of the human soul, running errands when a telegram would have sufficed. With achievements like this, it's hard to imagine what heights you'll rise to next. The infantile robot stiffened and stood at attention.
Actually, friend, this is a one-way mission. I'll be spending the rest of my days on the bottom of the seafloor. I'm afraid I can't afford to be captured whilst telling a prophecy, you see.
It made sense. He had been magically transported out here from the facilities at Cerceval. It isn't like he could hop back by himself. Ordering Friedrich to bury himself at the bottom of the ocean was the only sensible way to handle the information. Do tell. Let's have it then. The automaton popped all of its joints with an off-key chiming sound and stood even more stiffly than before. Its eyes cycled orange, then red, then to a light cyan. Another voice came out of the speaker now. It was a weak, female voice, but its shallow breath cut right through the air. Somehow over the creak of the ship and the whine of the engine, Darren could hear her as clearly as if they were in a snow-covered forest together.
Darren.
Her voice was like threadbare silk. Darren couldn't believe he was about to listen to her. Pressure crept into his eyes, and his ears began to burn. He could feel his own pulse in his neck, in his hands, in his feet. He could stop her now, if he wanted. By allowing her to speak, he allowed her will to be put into play.
Listen carefully to my message. Take what you will from this and use it if you wish. If you fail to hear my words, how will you know whether or not you will wish to heed them?
Apparently, she was familiar with her own reputation. Darren wondered whether or not that boilerplate was on every prophecy, or if he was just more apprehensive than the average man. The robot lumbered forward and placed an appendage on Darren's hand, stroking it in a calming motion. It seemed to calculate his fingertips before its gaze met Darren's.
You will be unmasked in the days ahead. You will pay for what you've done. It falls to you to choose the moment of revelation.
The boat took a particularly fierce wave across the stern and bucked hard. Darren's lamp toppled from the nightstand and plummeted towards the steel floor, but he caught the base just in time. The swift motion of his hand extinguished the flame, and the wind guard shattered against the ground. Suddenly, he was alone with the cold blue eyes of the robot.
Allow the moment of confession to be chosen for you, and you and all of your friends will die.
Moments passed, and the diminutive messenger fell silent. Swell, Darren replied with a wide-eyed frown. The original seafoam color returned to the construct's lenses.
Did you turn off the lights for effect, old boy?
No, I didn't.
Was someone else here?
Then, with urgency,
have we been compromised?
No, Friedrich, I just dropped the lamp.
Ah.
Indeed.
Why aren't we on fire?
Caught it, Darren said.
Ah.
Then a brief pause.
Well, that's as good a spot as any to go up and throw myself overboard.
And with that, Friedrich turned and clanked away toward the door. He pushed it open, and some of the light from the hallway stole inside. Friedrich, I didn't get a chance to tell you before now.
Tell me what, lad?
Darren couldn't believe how stupid he felt. He was going to say it anyway. Goodbye. Friedrich stopped and turned to Darren.
Godspeed, lad. Maybe we'll meet in the next world.
Darren snorted. Maybe so. But before Friedrich left, he added,
then again, knowing you, maybe not.
Faye Brochelle made her way down Seaspray Avenue, Fumiston's main drag. Lorries and shiny roadsters alike puttered past, clambering over cobblestones and flavoring the air with their special scent. She rather liked the cities of the Northlands for the way that their citizens embraced new trends. Dozens of electric lines had been strung overhead, interwoven with what was no doubt telephone wire. Distant smokestacks in the factory district puffed away, a silent testimony to the industrial era that gripped the country. Even the fashion here was more advanced. The citizenry had taken to wearing dark colors with minimal detail, and the women were wearing more pants and shorter skirts. The men allowed the sharp lines of their suits and coats to shape their bodies, and only used jewelry for minor punctuations of style. The trends that began in Fumiston radiated to the rest of the world, and were adopted by all but the most insular countries. Faye thought of her home village and its horse-drawn carriages, and shivered in the wind. Even bundled up in her black wool coat, she was a tiny thing who simply couldn't keep warm in the harsh Northland winters. She was happy to be there, though, even if she was on a job with the Barrett brothers. It was a tough life, but joining up with them was the best thing she had ever done. And yet, as she rounded the corner past a grocery store and nonchalantly strode past a pair of policemen, her mind drifted to their mysterious patron. The man-thing had swept in through the window of their mountain hideaway as though he owned the place, and cornered the eldest of the brothers without so much as a word. Faye had barely seen him as the creature spoke to Everett Barrett, but what she had seen frightened her. Brilliant pink irises framed by a frightfully pale face and a body wreathed in undulating shadow were all that she could remember. Those in the creature's wicked chain. He paid in gold bars, which weren't exactly the standard currency that the brothers used. She tried not to think about the creature, but she couldn't stop herself. What if they got caught? The creature had promised them untold riches, but his price was undoubtedly high. If they failed, he would find the mercenary group again, just like he found their mountain hideout. Nicholas, he called himself. She would never look at that name the same way again. As Faye walked past the branch offices of Lockhart United Telegraph, she ducked into an alleyway. The electric lines hummed overhead as she wound her way past derelict boxes and other detritus until she came to an unmarked, weathered green door. She drummed out a 12-note phrase upon the cracked paint and waited. She would be just fine, she told herself. She was the best marksman that the Barrett brothers had ever seen. She'd been in plenty of sticky situations before, including robbery, assault, and extortion. Shooting a bunch of students outside their houses wouldn't be any trouble to a woman like Faye Brochelle. Something in the pit of her stomach told her that this time was different, though, and she tried to remember if she always got like that before a job. The door swung wide with seemingly no one behind it, revealing a dusty warehouse. Faye took two steps inside, and raised her hands before she even felt the cool metal of the gun on the back of her head. She set her stance on the pavement, showing that she was truly non-threatening.
"It's just me, Aaron,"
she said as she felt a set of hands pass over her body. "Maybe I just like patting you down, Faye," Aaron Barrett responded. Faye found him hideous, but his money was green.
"Hands off, you lug,"
she said, feigning laughter, and stepped further inside. "Were you followed?"
"Would I have come back if I were?"
she mused, shutting the door behind her. "Maybe you would," Aaron snorted. He still hadn't uncocked the hammer on his gun.
"Oh, be quiet,"
said Faye and strode into the room.
"Everett? Dusty?"
she called. The two armed men made their way from the shadows, lowering revolvers. Both were scruffy-looking gentlemen in their mid-30s. "Did you get what you wanted?" the nearest one asked.
"Yeah, Everett. I found the house where that cog girl is staying,"
Faye replied.
"It's a joke. There's no security. We could plug her right now."
"Don't kid yourself, girlie," said Everett, wiping off his gun. "Nicholas said we should always take her seriously." "Well, Everett, wouldn't it be taking her seriously if we went over there right now and pumped her guts full of lead?" asked Aaron. "Seconded," said Dusty, plopping down into a nearby wooden chair. As the rickety old chair groaned under his weight, Faye noticed the sounds of wood strain somewhere else in the warehouse. Someone was watching them. Someone who thought he could shift his weight, right as Dusty sat down. Faye ripped her revolver from her shoulder holster under her jacket before anyone could even blink.
"We're being
watched," was what she meant to say. but a black-gloved fist caught her in the face before she had time to finish. Another hand pulled the revolver from her hands, and she swore she heard the tinkling sounds of a cylinder emptying as it hit the ground. As the vision returned to her eyes, she saw a man in his late 30s with close-cropped hair, a strong jawline, and a smartly cut black suit that fit in perfectly with Gull's sensibilities. Faye stumbled backwards a few steps as she heard the hammers locking into place. Whoever the man was, he was surrounded, and Dusty, Aaron, and Everett had beads on him. Whoever he was a dead man.
"Who are you?" Everett growled.
"Where did you come from?"
Aaron added. He was the closest to the mysterious guest, and seemed a bit shaken by his presence. The mystery gentleman cracked a smile. Faye had to admit that, for a man who had just punched her, he was fairly dashing. He cocked one bold eyebrow and spoke to the men.
"As is the will of Queen Anne of Gelsed, I'd like for you and your men to come with me, Everett Barrett."
"You're not gonna tell me who you are?"
Everett asked, raising his aim from the man's chest to his head.
"I am a Queensman, an agent of the Crown, and I don't need to give my name to trash like you," said the man.
Dusty and Aaron laughed. Everett's eyes just grew cold.
"I wanted to talk. Now I've got to kill you, stranger."
"Anyone who pulls a trigger will not leave here alive."
The tip of Everett's revolver roared and spewed flame as he jerked the trigger, but the Queensman was gone. It was as if the stranger was a reflection in a mirror, and someone had suddenly just turned the reflective surface away from him. The man sort of shifted and then disappeared into a blur, only to reappear behind Everett in much the same fashion.
"Everett!"
Faye screamed, but it was too late. The Queensman casually put two shots into Everett's back before he even knew what happened. The leader of the Barrett brothers crumpled to the ground without a real fight. Dusty and Aaron howled in fury and riddled the air with bullets, but the Queensman was gone again. A blur and a flash later, the stranger was standing right behind Aaron with a smoking gun. Aaron's face went pale, and he keeled over instantly dead. Dusty turned to run, but the Queensman's bullets caught up with him before he had taken two steps. The third Barrett brother collapsed to the ground, rolling into some crates.
It couldn't be happening. The Barrett brothers had robbed the Northland Federal Reserve train and gotten away. The Barrett brothers had kidnapped the mayor of Edenton's daughter and gotten away. The Barrett brothers were invincible, crazy men who wouldn't go down without a fight.
Terror seized Faye as the stranger turned and took a few steps toward her and extended a gloved hand.
"Now, my dear, you understand why I took your gun. I certainly wouldn't like for a lady such as yourself to get involved in that little altercation."
Faye couldn't help but stare and shake uncontrollably.
"You won't make me resort to fisticuffs, will you? I don't relish the thought of dragging an unconscious woman around."
"Am I under arrest?"
Faye stammered.
"You haven't done anything yet. Conspiracy against the Gull Crown is hardly a crime here in the Northlands."
"But you punched me."
"I know your type. Of all the people in this room, you had the best chance of shooting me," the Queensman explained. "And I don't like to be shot."
"Oh.
So you will come with me?"
"Why?"
asked Faye.
"Why did you know we were here?"
The Queensman knelt down so he could seem a little more social. "A little bird told me everything. She asked me to stop you from interfering with the students here."
"Oh."
She breathed.
It was true that Faye had never really felt any affection for the Barretts. They were dangerous men, and Aaron often stared at her just a little too long for comfort. Faye would miss the name, though. It carried a lot of weight. Maybe this was all for the best. Besides, the man said she wasn't under arrest.
"I was actually also told to ask one more thing of you."
Faye's heart froze. What could he possibly want? The Queensman smiled as he took her hand.
"What are you doing with your life?"
Following you somewhere?"
she probed.
"How would you like to serve the Crown?"
Faye smiled back.
"Can I still be called Faye Barrett?"
"Who is this lone gunwoman, and what are the Seeker's plans for her? What sins does Darren have in his past, and can he overcome them? What is the web woven by the Seeress, and what does it all mean? Find out next time on The Gearheart."
The
This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Candy's Conspiracies. Conspiracies for the modern budget. Want to have a neon-spanning secret, but don't have the cash to hide ridiculous Latin clues in the Mona Lisa or Declaration of Independence? Look no further than Candy's Conspiracies. For a nominal fee, Candy will carve some cryptic nonsense into a rock and then act as a cultist protecting it. Candy's Conspiracies, sine labore nihil. And by Edward's Angst Cream, cream for the goth scene. Looking to get that sickly white complexion, but don't want to become a member of the undead? Dreaming of impressing some random girl, but worried that you're not mopey enough? Reach for Edward's Angst Cream and watch as the crazies flock to your side. Also doubles as hair product.
When you've gotta have that gothic gleam, just reach for an Edward's Angst Cream.